We are delighted that this week's episode is sponsored by The Animal Guys, who tour the UK and Europe educating audiences about all creatures, great and small.
Having just completed a sellout theatre tour, what makes The Animal Guys different is they've developed an entire show that involves no live animals.
They truly believe in learning through laughter and educating families today so that we can save the animals of tomorrow.
To find out more and for tickets to their tour, just Google The Animal Guys.
Do you struggle with your mental health? Well, when you consider your brain isn't designed to make you happy, is it any wonder? Whilst your brain isn't designed to make you happy, there are many things that you can do on a daily basis to change that and to create happiness within your life.
Yeah, I think a lot of us feel really disappointed that we're just like, we don't wake up and we're full of beans and feeling really happy. But, you know, when you realise that your brain's primary objective is sort of to keep this amazing body running, but also sort of retain thoughts and protect you, basically. That's the big thing, protection. Then,
simple terms, EB, it's all about survival.
It is.
All our brain wants to do is keep us alive, and it will do that at any cost. And that any cost can sometimes backfire and really affect our mental health in a bad way.
I like to use the analogy that having happiness is like having a TV, in that if you want to be happy, you have to do certain things to create that happiness. Just like if I watch TV and I want to laugh, then I've got to flick through the channels and find something that is going to make me feel good and make me laugh. And I think that's the same in life. We have to look for those things. We have to create those things. And can your brain be happy? Of course it can, but we have to put that effort in, I guess, to make that happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's really important, because I think a lot of people as well would look at you and say, oh, well, you just always seem happy. You know, you're always happy, and you know, they see you on TV sort of being happy and think that that must be it, and you just never struggle and you never have difficulties. And I think that that's the thing, you know, in life, we're always going to face difficulties, and, you know, some more than others, granted, and I totally accept that. But irrespective, you don't just feel happy. It's not a natural thing. And I think that a lot of people, if they don't just naturally feel happy, assume that that's something wrong with them, and that everybody else is feeling really happy, but they're not. And therefore that there's something wrong with them, rather than accepting that actually everybody isn't naturally happy, and that things, you have to, you know, whether you have loads of amazing things in your life or not, it really, that's not what helps us feel happy. We have to do things to create that happiness.
Yeah. Well, you'll notice that. Sorry, Hunter.
I was going to say, even with us, I think, because I think even with you two, people might look at you and go, actually, I mean, you're the therapist, so maybe you can't necessarily help yourselves. But I think even with us, a common question I get from people is, have you got anything wrong with you? Have you got any phobias? And then I then notice, oh, I bet you haven't, have you? But even with us, like, things still get to us and still happen. It's not just like because we have you two that things don't get to us.
And I think that's a really good point, because it's a preventative rather than a treatment in people's eyes. And that's where they're wrong, because people think that we will not ever struggle with anything because we're going to be somehow prevented from experiencing these things with having therapists as parents, and, you know, now being a therapist myself. And actually, Hunter's spot on that. Yes, it gives us better ways to deal with things, because it's like, you know, you've given us a toolkit essentially to deal with situations.
They understand it better.
Yes. And you've got the understanding. But it doesn't mean that we're prevented from experiencing life, because life has ups and downs.
And as we always say, it doesn't matter, you know, it doesn't matter who you are, it doesn't matter where you come from, doesn't matter how wealthy or how poor, how young, how old, you know, nobody is immune to feeling sad. No one's immune to mental health issues. Equally, no one's immune to being affected by happiness as well.
But when you consider, and that's just, and let's not lose sight of, we're all the same and our brains work in the same way. And if you consider, you can hear the funniest joke and you can laugh about that joke and it's amazing. But then if you hear the same joke again, it won't be as funny. If you hear it for a third time, it's less funny. If you hear it for a fourth time, it may not even be funny at all, because you've heard it three times before. Now, if you've got something that's troubling you and you think about that, then the next time you think about it, the first time, it starts to get a little bit bigger. And then when you look at it again, it gets a bit bigger, and then gets a bit bigger again. And the reason being is because your brain is trying to protect you from that thing that you're worried about. It wants you to deal with it. It wants you to solve it. But if you feel that you can't do that emotionally, then it will spiral out of control.
So I think what we're saying here is that the first step to happiness is appreciating that nobody is constantly happy. You've got to appreciate that we do have ups and downs in life, but just like the body, you know, if you want a good body, if you want to be healthy, then there are things that you have to do. You know, you do have to go to the gym or exercise. You do have to eat healthy. You do have to keep hydrated. And that's physical health and physical happiness. But when it comes to mental health and mental happiness, the same applies. You know, there are exercises and things that you have to do to create that. And it's really lovely to hear both you, yourself, Liv and Hunter, saying that, you know, of course you have ups and downs in life. Of course things go wrong for you as they do for us. But what's very lovely for us to hear is that you acknowledge this toolbox that you have, that you, because of what we've kind of shared and taught you, to help see things in a slightly better way.
Yeah, and I think that one thing that we all do wrong is we put our happiness on external factors. So we think that we will be happy when we've achieved certain things or we've got certain things, and therefore we have a tendency to look at other people and assume they're happier than us because they've got things that we would like, or, you know, they've got things figured out that we've not yet figured out. And the truth is that that isn't the case. And I know we always hear this, you know, happiness comes from within, and it's true. You know, I always found it fascinating that, you know, a great podcast that I often listen to is Dax Shepard, who's an American actor, and his podcast where he interviews other celebrities, and the sort of celebrities on his podcast, you know, you're really high A-listers from the likes of, he's had like Hillary Clinton on there and Barack Obama, you know, to sort of actors, actresses, that he has on there. And the one thing that he always seems to come to with them, you know, people that we would look at and say, wow, their lives are amazing. You know, they've got everything. They can afford to spend anything they want to spend. They can go anywhere they want to go. There's nothing stopping them. And yet one thing that he always asks them is that when he always felt that once he got famous and he got to Hollywood and he did all that, that he'd be so happy because he'd achieved everything he wanted to achieve. And actually he felt even worse when he did get all those things, because he realized that he still wasn't happy and he had everything that he thought would make him happy. And he was now kind of, well, I've got what I thought would make me happy. So now what? This is even worse. At least I had something to look forward to when I got there. Now I don't.
Makes complete sense.
And so this is something that he always asks people on his podcast, which is basically, you know, when you got all these things, did you feel happier? Or actually, how did you feel? And it's so interesting how every time I hear these people say, you know, different actors, different actresses all saying the same thing, which is actually, no, like I didn't feel any happier. I got that. And then it was, well, the sort of, I think what happens is when you get those things that you always thought would make you happy, the problems and things that were preventing your happiness actually rear their heads. Because, you know, if you've got low self-esteem, you can have all those things, but you still don't like yourself. And, you know, if you've got traumas you've not dealt with, you can have all those things, but you still have those traumas.
Or problematic family members.
Exactly. And so, you know, it doesn't, material things and things we put on our happiness actually don't give us happiness when we have them. It's looking at kind of our mental health and, you know, like you said, all our brains work the same, and what is preventing our happiness day to day, and what things can we do to boost that happiness? It's not the things we think it is.
I think one of the happiest people I ever met in my life was your dad, Nick. He seemed just always happy.
You know, my dad found for me the secret of eternal happiness, and I think that his key for that was, instead of this statement that we all use, "I'll be happy when." And, you know, fill in the blanks at the end of that sentence. But, you know, when I get that new job, when I get that house, when I get out of this relationship that I'm in, when I get into a newer relationship. But saying "I'll be happy when" paralyzes you. And because, and especially if, you know, if you're in a situation where that "when" is outside of your control. If it's in your control, then that's fine. But if it's outside of your control, then that really puts you in a poor state. However, my dad had the mindset of "I'm happy now."
Yeah.
And every day, and, you know, and it comes down, we'll talk to us about one of the aspects of being able to to combat this was gratitude, because every day he was living his best life, and it never changed. And it was every single day.
And I think when we say I'll be happy when, if we live by that philosophy, I'll be happy when this happens, I'll be happy when that happens, we're consistently moving the goalposts. And I think, you know, your dad, he was just the loveliest man, and I never ever saw him angry, or he just loved everything, you know. And he would point out the beautiful flowers and how much he loved Liv. I know Hunter wasn't born when your dad was here, but he just did really look for the positive, and I love that. And the other thing that I think that is very apparent to happiness, and I think Liv and Hunter and ourselves are something that it will really resonates with us, but that you might have that for me, I think having goals is a really big and very important part of happiness, and definitely worked for me. You know, when I met you, I had no goals. I was, you know, instead of planning my life, I was living by other people's plans. Instead of having my own goals, I was helping other people to create theirs. Not nobody's fault, but I simply didn't have any goals in my life. And what's very interesting is that I attribute my happiness and my progress, thanks to you, Nick, actually, encouraging me to create goals. But what's very interesting with you, Liv and Hunter, that, and I think we actually spoke about it the other day, is that obviously we've always encouraged you both to have goals and to have things to work towards. But your big ones, for you, Liv, it was, I'm going to go to Oxford. For you, Hunter, I'm going to go to America. And because, and this is just highlights why we should keep evaluating our goals, because you both, Liv and Hunter, had these two big goals, Oxford, America. You then achieved them. And then what happened?
I mean, I literally said to you last week, didn't I, that I felt like this past semester at Williams, like I'd really enjoyed it and I'd loved it and I'd done so much amazing things and made amazing friends and stuff. I know I didn't really feel like I had the same level of achievement that I had before. I hadn't really done as much as I would have liked. Academically, I did everything, but like extracurricular, I just hadn't really achieved as much as I was hoping to. And I said to you last week, I was like, oh my God, I've just realised I didn't set any goals. I had no idea. I wasn't working towards anything. I wanted to do things, but I never said to myself what those things were, and I was never looking, because of that, I wasn't looking for the opportunities to do things, and I just didn't have any more goals after that. That was it. I went to America, and then what was next? I didn't have anything.
Exactly. I think that having goals, it does give you purpose. Having goals gives you drive, gives you something to work towards, gives you a sense of achievement, gives you a sense of energy. You know, a lot of people say, how do you keep motivated? I'm motivated because every day and every night before I go to bed, I know two or three things that I want to achieve the following day. And this is why when I say goals, you know, yes, goals for the future, but goals for tomorrow, goals for hobbies, goals for people I'd like to be around, places I'd like to go, restaurants I'd like to visit. And it just gives you this wonderful focus. And if you are struggling with your mental health, having goals gives you a positive distraction.
Just say as well, you know, when you make a list of things you need to do, you tick things off and you get a sense of achievement when you do something. If you have a goal, anything you do where you work towards it and you accomplish something that's towards that goal, you get that kind of sense of achievement and you get that kind of rewarding feeling, I think, as well, which can just help.
Yeah, absolutely.
State of mind.
And I think that goals are really important, but I think there's a caveat to that, which is, I mean, because, you know, I go back to what I was saying before about people that, you know, they have this big goal and then they get it and go, oh, actually, I'm not that happy. Mm. And I think that there's twofold to that. And the first thing is, yes, having constant goals, not just one big goal. Because for me, for example, my goal was to get to Oxford and I got to Oxford and I could have gone, well, what now? What do I do now? What do I do after that? And then that actually can make you feel worse in a way, because it's like, if you put everything on one thing and then you get that one thing, which is, as I was saying before, the scenario with all these, you know, famous Hollywood actors and stuff, then it's like, well, I've got it now. What do I do? And actually that can make you feel worse. So I think the first caveat is to have constant goals. So, and I think that's why smaller goals can work better actually as well, because, you know, if your goal is to, for example, right, thinking of someone that I've sort of worked with in clinic, which is she had a goal to complete something, a course that she'd started years ago and never completed it. And the goal of completing that seemed like a massive goal, whereas actually creating lots of little goals, she found really fantastic and really motivating, which was like, right, I'm just going to get my books out and have a look over it. And then the next goal was, right, I'm going to make a little start on sort of a plan of what I'm going to write for each bit, and then I'll come back to it. And just little bits of goals actually is really motivating. And like I said, keeping constantly having goals, so you don't get it and go, oh, I've got it now, what to do now? You know, keeping having goals. And I think the second caveat is actually taking stock of when you have achieved things. And I think this is the biggest one of all, because I think so many people listening will relate to, you know, the fact that they probably have things right now that at one point in time were a goal. And this was the thing for me, right? When I was at Oxford, there was times I was so stressed out and I'd just think, oh my God, this is awful and I've got so much work. And I'd take a minute and go, hang on, I'm doing this thing that I've wanted for so many years, and how lucky am I? But you lose sight of it. And again, it's, you know, going back to Hollywood A-listers, they get the job and it's like, I've got it now, what now? Well, it's taking stock and going, I've got it now, and this is what I've always wanted, and how lucky am I, and how incredible, and I want to enjoy it because this is something that I've always built towards. And I think taking stock of A, what's come that you've, you know, you've just forgotten about now, because once you've got it, you move on to the next thing, is really important. And B, when you actually are experiencing those things, to make the most of it and enjoy it, because it was so important to you, and not forget how much you wanted that thing.
And I think that's exactly what my dad did. He enjoyed the journey. It wasn't just the goal, it was the journey for him, and he just loved life.
And
that's something that we like I say, we do lose sight of, in the fact that we have goals, we've achieved, you know, everyone listening, if you just look back at your life now and the things that you wanted in your life, look at your surroundings, where you live, you know, if you're listening to this in your car, look at your car, that there'd be a point where you were like, well, I really want, if I, you know, I'll be so happy if I get this car, and you might be in that car listening to this podcast right now, and you've just take it for granted, and where you live, you take it for granted. So it is looking at that journey.
I think keeping an achievement book or some sort of achievement, even on your notes on your phone, is such a great exercise, because then you've actually got something to prove and show just the things that you've achieved. And it's funny that you were saying there, Nick, about sort of achievements, and we take them for granted. I know that, you know, I was up until I was 17, the big focus for me was, I just wanted to learn to drive. It was just like one of my biggest dreams. It literally felt like I would suddenly grow wings. I was so excited about driving, and passed my test first time and absolutely loved it. And I would drive and just feel great. Now I just jump in the car and I drive. And sometimes I have to stop myself, and I do this. And I just think back to when, just before I was 17, and how desperately I wanted to drive. And then I'm thinking, oh, wow, I'm driving and it's really good. But we let these things, they just become the norm, don't they?
Just think about the label that you put on that. Yeah. If I pass my driving test, this will change everything.
I got grew wings. Everything. Yeah.
And yet you can just take it for granted. What's interesting is that so many people, when they're setting goals, they create vision boards, which is a great idea, because you can look at it every day and you can see those things that you want to move towards. But just while we've been talking, now I've not thought about it. What about creating a vision board of the past, not just the future, but one of the past, and photographs of all those things that you've achieved? Because if you look, if you have those two boards together and you look at what you want, then, you know, we all get that niggle. I don't know if I can do that. But then you can look back at the things that you've done. And you go, hold on a minute, I never thought I could do this. Yeah. And having so those true. Two boys together.
Yeah. And that's a really nice idea. Like, so you're still pushing forward and doing all the things that you want to achieve, but still taking stock and appreciating what you've actually done.
Yeah.
I think the combination is really key.
Yeah.
And it's putting fun, the two
it's,
together.
Yeah, it's a really lovely idea, actually, that, Nick. I do quite like the thought of that, because all of us as individuals throughout our lives, and it's not just what you've achieved as in, you know, passing a driving test, but also things that you've experienced, you know, like I know, Hunter, you were saying about, you know, since you started at Williams, you've been skiing, for example. I mean, when did you ever think you could just jump on a bus?
I always wanted to do that. And then because it was so normal whilst I was there, I just kind of forgot that it was a commodity, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that. It's funny because I was literally only talking to someone yesterday and saying about how, you know, this year, and you think about what I've achieved this year. And it's funny how we can look at things and go, oh, what have I actually done this year? And then you look and actually really consider it and think, oh my God, I've done so much stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, even just for me, like the amount of solo travel I've done this year, and it's like, sort of give it 3 months after I come back from it, and it's like, I don't see it as a big thing anymore. But it was massive.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's funny how, like, you know, same with you.
I was saying, like, the first time I got the first flight to the US alone or back, it was such a big deal. I was like going to the airport for the first time internationally. I don't know. It's just do it. It's not a big deal. Literally, it's just. Yeah.
And I think as well, I know I spoke about this before on our podcast, but we compare ourselves to others. And if it's something that other people can just do, we go, well, it's not that impressive because other people can just do it anyway. And I remember working with someone in therapy who she had a problem for 45 years. She'd never, ever been able to do something that she wanted to do that, you know, seems so simple to us as a daily task. And that lady, after I spoke to her, has done it. And she said, oh, but it's not a big deal. I know it's been 45 years, but everybody can do that every day. So it's not a big deal.
What?
And it's like, but that's what we do, isn't it?
We downplay our achievements.
Because we compare ourselves rather than going, hang on, I've not been able to do something for 45 years and I've just done it with ease.
Mm. One thing that we just never know is what is going on in someone else's head. And you can look, right? So someone can post photographs on Instagram, for example, of them going away on their own for the first time. And you can look at that and think, oh, I wish I could do that. You've no idea the anxiety that they had to overcome. And some of those photographs, they could have been absolutely full of anxiety. You can't see that in the photograph. You don't know what they did. And we just look at other people and think, oh, it must be easy for them. But it isn't. Yeah. It isn't.
And I think that's one thing that you always said to the kids, Nick, and which has been our philosophy, thanks to what your dad said with yourself at Living Hunter, is that at school, for example, we always said, don't worry about being the best, just do better than what you did last time. That's all that you need to work for. So, you know, if it was your spelling test and it was out of 10 and you got 7 out of 10, just if you get 8 out of 10, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Because it shows that you're making progress. And I
think that's another key tip for happiness, isn't it? Is look absolutely. At your progress, not look at others, because you'll always find people that will be doing better than you
always.
In some places, but equally, we don't think about what we're doing better than that person in other places. So does that make sense? Yeah. So you can look at someone and compare on one factor and go, oh, they're better than me. But actually you might be better than them at something else. But on this factor, you know, but they might be better than you, but it's about what you're doing and how you're improving.
But not even that really. I mean, obviously, yes, but also we all start in different places as well.
True.
So even though one person might be better at you than something, you might have progressed in the area so much further and come so much further than they have.
Yeah.
So really, what's more impressive? Which is more
valuable?
That's also
a good point, because it's like you always, again, your dad, I've got to say, you're fairly wise.
I'm a fountain of knowledge.
It's because maybe you're like Yoda, very old.
It's nothing to do with that.
That you've collected all this information. But you have always said that a lot of people will compare themselves to other people, but you might be comparing your year one with their year 10. So it's not a fair comparison. So you should always just compare yourself to your own.
What's interesting, the Olympics is interesting. And the reason why
that's a discussion.
Yeah, no, there's a reason why. The reason why it's interesting.
I did enjoy it this time.
You imagine getting to the Olympics, right? It shows that you are, you know, amongst the best in whatever event it is that you're in. Someone's always going to get the gold, right? And it might not be you, but the fact that you got there is incredible. And when, as Hunter just said, you don't know when you started the journey as to when they started the journey. Mm. One thing that does happen at the Olympics, someone who wins the gold medal, you know, in one year, if they compete in the following year, don't always get the gold. They'll get beaten by someone who got the bronze in the previous Olympics, right? So it depends where you start your journey, which is also very important.
Can I just add a little, very small little addition here? Before everybody goes, oh my gosh, you were slating the Olympics. I actually don't mind the Olympics, but it's just certain sports that others I find a bit boring.
Yeah, that's fine.
No, that's all I meant.
I was just going to say, also, people can have a bad day. True. So interestingly, absolutely. Or just a bad, like, you know, every time we do, I find it really interesting. Me and Dad watched the high jump together, and I found it really fascinating that there was two high jumpers left, and they kind of keep lifting the bar until someone gets knocked out, right? And they got it to a certain height. There was two high jumpers left. They both couldn't make the height, so they went, right, we'll bring it back down again. So, you know, and until someone knocks it, someone clears it, someone knocks it off, right? They started bringing it down. They're bringing it down to heights that they've both cleared. and suddenly they can't clear it. The same jumpers. But sometimes you just have a bad jump.
Well, and the reason for that is that they'd already cleared that height, and then it was now lower than the height that they cleared. But now there was more stress because it was just down to them too.
But that's my point. It can even be someone's having a bad day, someone's having a better day, someone wasn't concentrating. Like, we can't compare ourselves on just certain
performance.
And Hunter said before about comparing your sort of day one to someone else's, you know, further down the line. But not only that, but there's another element as well, which I've just considered, which is what have we got going on in our lives compared to other people? Because it might be the person that you're comparing to doesn't have all the responsibilities, stresses, and commitments that you've got. And maybe you're achieving what you're achieving with all those extra things.
So you're actually, like a megastar. So another component here, sort of, as we're talking, that really stands out in my mind are things that might steal our happiness or that affect our mental health. Health, both in a good way or in a bad way, is the people that we surround ourselves with. That's a good topic.
Yeah, because, you know, if we're around people who, if we look at our peer group, and if we are sort of achieving the most in our peer group, then what we will want to do is play down our achievements because we don't want them other people to feel bad.
Yeah,
You know, which does happen.
But even going to a party, for example, you can have a party and the same people go to the same party, and some people will have absolutely loved it because they've been with people that have been really fun and funny and they've had some great conversations. And then other people have been stuck with people that they've not maybe gelled with.
Ever.
And then they're like, oh, this was a horrible party. So the people, not just like, so in that kind of situation, but also, you know, people who you work with can impact your happiness and affect you both in a good way or a bad way. You've got people in your family that can affect you good or bad. People at uni, college, whatever.
It's so contextual. Let's talk about Nickelback.
Oh.
We've not done that for a while.
That's a big one. Controversial.
Yeah, well, it's controversial. It's out. Let's talk about Nickelback.
Why?
How many times have we seen Nickelback?
I reckon some have seen 10 and 20. That's a safe bet, right, isn't it? Between 10 and 20
so
times.
So you look at that and they're always, I mean, let's be honest, they are always great. However, we saw them in Vegas. It was another level.
They were amazing. But one of the most controversial bands of all time because some people just don't like them. They're the most hated band on the planet.
And yet their music is fantastic.
But exactly, but it's all difference of opinion, isn't it? Right? And so we can look at it and go, even the best can be even better.
But the reason why I brought Nickelback into the conversation was the fact that when we saw them in Vegas, it was another level. But was it the fact that they played better or Chad sang better than ever before? Or was it just because of the crowd?
Or was it our interpretation because we were happy to be in Vegas?
So there's so many factors, isn't there?
And that is it. That's the same with happiness and mental health and positive mental health. There are numerous factors, and the people that you surround yourself with have a big impact. So, you know, you might have people in your life who are very negative and therefore make you feel negative because all they talk about is what's going wrong. You might have some people that have very low self-esteem and inadvertently make you feel bad because they feel bad. They sort of nitpick. So that can have an effect on you as well. People at work, you know, the people that we can't choose, I guess, are family members, people that we work with, and neighbours. And if in any of those three scenarios, we have people that are quite negative, we can feel trapped in that pit of negativity. And that, you know, that then leads dread and, oh my gosh, I don't want to go to work. And how do I deal with this family member? I don't really want them a part of my life, but I feel this obligation and I feel this guilt. And then you're seeing that neighbor consistently. And they, you know, these people that are around us can impact our mental health greatly. And because we can't change those, you know, obviously if you can avoid, then avoid. But what we then should do is also surround ourselves with better people, you know, so that we're giving it more of a balance, because it's like a slippery slope. You know, the negative people make you slide down. So keep building yourself up with positive people, find positive friends. And the best way to do that is through hobbies, etc. A lot of people say, oh, you know, I struggle to make friends or I struggle to meet like-minded people. But the best thing to do is if you enjoy something, you're more likely to meet like-minded people doing something that you enjoy.
Here's a question then. So you're saying basically life can be like snakes and ladders.
I guess, is it?
Yeah, but do you know what? Whenever you played snakes and ladders, you always got to the end, didn't you?
Mm.
Well, you always started off, you always finish in a better position than when you started.
I loved Snakes and Ladders. When I was a kid, I like, you know, nowadays there's these, all these newfangled games and that are really like snazzy and you can play. Yeah. And whereas when I was a kid, I had Snakes and Ladders and Ludo and Monopoly, Scrabble.
That Ludo was great.
See, I think Snakes and Ladders, now you've said that, it's really exciting me. I want a game of Snakes and Ladders. Yeah,
now I've brought that up, I feel pretty bad. You know, why were the snakes singled out to be the bad guys? Why wasn't it Slides and Ladders?
That would have been more equitable, wouldn't it, really? Because Slides and Ladders are more like the same sort of items.
Yes, exactly.
It doesn't have the same ring, though, does it?
No, it doesn't.
No, but why,
it doesn't, but it's a good point.
Bring snakes into it?
Because you climb up a ladder. You climb up a ladder, but you don't slide down a snake, but you do slide down a slide. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't really make sense when you think about it.
I like that analogy, because there's people along the way that will bring you down, some that will help you up, and in the end, you always get to the end. But equally, but I think what the analogy of that is, when you land on a snake, you're like, oh, I wish that hadn't happened. But in your life, I think you put up with people that drag you down more than you should, whereas in the game, it's, you don't... Do you see what I'm trying to say?
I do, but I think what I love, again, just using you as your story, Hunter, I love how, you know, when you first started uni and you were around people that, you know, me and your dad sort of said, there's no bad people in the world, just bad circumstances create bad behaviours. However, when you first started at uni, you sort of were around people that they weren't very sort of hard workers, they weren't very academic, they were quite negative. You know, just about others.
They weren't supportive of me or very caring, really. Yeah.
And we, you know, using the Snakes and Ladders analogy there and scenario, your dad and I could see a slip in your positivity, in your motivation, in your happiness. And then obviously when you came home and we sort of spoke to you and sort of helped you to realise that actually you need to go and find a ladder to climb instead of that snake was no good for you, and you moved over and you found better people. You've now found people that, what a change in you, in your attitude.
Even just when you brought them up, thinking about them makes me happy. It's such a massive change in the way I see the world and just everything because of those people. Like, at university, it's a completely different experience. Like, my first semester, I enjoyed it, but it was tough. It was okay. And then last semester was just a completely different experience. It was on a whole new level for me because of those people.
Yeah, it is.
Do you not think as well, what's good about that Snakes and Ladders analogy is the fact that this is where we go wrong, which is that when you look at the Snakes and Ladders board, right? When you roll the dice and you land on a snake, you feel gutted, right? You're like, oh God, I wish I hadn't landed on that. But you don't just go, oh, I'm just going to give up with this game, because you're going to get there. But that's because you're looking at the board from above. So you can see the bigger picture can see that despite the slide, right, you're still closer than where you started. But in life, we don't have that overview. Mm. So we just think like, oh my God, this is awful. I'm at rock bottom because I've had this situation. We don't go, but hang on a minute. Yes, I'm back to here. But still, how far have I come?
Yeah.
Because that's the difference, isn't it? We just were so in that moment.
Yeah, because the big snake doesn't go back to step one, does it? It goes back to a lower one, but you've actually still moved
forward. Also, when you land on the snake, you have no control over it. Mm. Sometimes when that happens, something pulls you down.
Actually, Hunter, that's not true. So when we were little, Hunter, even if he went down a snake, sometimes he'd distract people and then suddenly be back at the top of the snake again as well. So, you know, it depends if you're playing games with Hunter or someone who's following the rules.
But still, the point is, when you land on a snake, you still land on it and it happened.
Unless you're Hunter and you can distract people and move. But
I still landed on it without my control.
That's true. That is true. I'll give you that. You still landed on the snake. You chose to follow the snake.
I mean, that was my own interest. Yeah. But.
Yes.
And sometimes there's bigger snakes than others. As you see on the board.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also, conversely, bigger ladders than others. Mm. But isn't it always a good feeling when you land, when you throw the dice and you land on the bottom of a snake, it can't do anything.
Another thing as well that we spoke about recently is actually the snake feels worse when you're nearer the end of the game. So this is something me and Dad spoke about recently, because I was giving him a little bit of science. So I'll go into my science corner, which is that science research shows that the closer we are to getting something and then we have a setback, the more anxious and frustrated we feel than if we were further away. So there's like research where they look at people who are in like lines to like get to a desk, like say like shopping or at the cinema or whatever. And they're at like to get to the desk, you know, it's quite a long line and someone pushes in front of them, but they're right near the back of the queue. People aren't as bothered. Right? Because they're already near the back of the queue anyway. One person, it doesn't really make a difference. Whereas if you're right near the front of the queue, you're next in line, and then someone pushes in.
Yeah. I want to rugby tackle them down.
It's like, how dare you? Yes. How very dare you? Do you know what I mean? And you get angry and frustrated. My point being is that sometimes in life, the biggest like setbacks can feel so big because you were so close.
Yes.
But actually, just hang on a minute. How close were you? Like, how great is that?
Well, that goes back to the Olympics.
And again, right back to the Olympics, right? The high jumps, they'd already jumped higher heights.
Yeah.
And now it's just down to those two. And now they can't jump the height that they've previously done.
Yeah.
But how many people in the Olympics go, hang on a minute. You know, you see these interviews with them. Oh, I'm so gutted. I got the silver. And it's like, hang on a minute.
You've
just come back with, not only did you get to the Olympics, which is amazing to represent your country, but you've even got a medal. Like, that's insane. But
even
again,
if you don't, though, the fact that you got there, I mean,
that you got there in the first place, it's just brilliant. It is. That's the thing we do lose sight of. It's constantly looking at the thing ahead rather than looking at how far we've come. And I think that's exactly it, isn't it? You know, to actually get there is amazing. And people feel so gutted because they were so close.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But actually realizing how close you were just shows how amazing you are.
Yeah, yeah. I also think another thing that can help you to feel happier and is better for your mental health, and that is to talk things out. You know, talk things out with people that you know, that people that are positive, people that you care about, a therapist. And the reason that's a really good idea is I like to use the analogy, if you imagine you have a balloon, and every time something negative happens, it's like you're blowing air in that balloon, and then that balloon,
so the balloon
becomes
gets
huge, and it's like so taut, and which is why you feel tense. Whereas when you talk, even though you might not be fixing something, or it might be feel like you're not fixing something, for every time you talk, you just letting a little bit of that air out of the balloon. So I think talking is,
and I love the fact you mentioned that, because just before this podcast I actually got a stat that I wanted to share, which was a survey showing that among adults 60 and over, I don't know why this was adults 60 and over, but I just thought it was interesting anyway, adults 60 and over, only 46% of those with any symptoms of mental health conditions actually go for help. 46%. So that's less than half of people needing treatment actually speak out to ask for help.
I think that's because older people are generally less likely to reach out because of stigmas for mental health, probably. And also just,
I mean, I do agree. I think nowadays people are more willing to talk about their mental health. Obviously, we know the stats in men as well are a lot lower. Like, men seeking mental health help is a lot lower. But I just think on the whole, if you're struggling, you know, why not speak out? And even if it doesn't, you know, it doesn't have to be a therapist, but speaking to people, I think as well, you know, there's so much research out there that shows that we often expect people's responses to be far worse than they are. People are willing to listen to us and they're not going to judge. And, you know, we always think, oh, I'm going to get so judged and it's going to be awful and I can't share how I'm feeling. But we lose sight of the fact that so many of the people are feeling the same way. And even if they don't have the same thing as you, they can go, oh, well, actually, I've had this, and they can relate in another way.
And that's what I love. What people underestimate is that when you actually speak out, then what actually happens is you give that person that you're speaking out to the opportunity to tell you about their little issue or their problem.
That they might have been too embarrassed to share, and you've now given them, you've opened the door for them to feel safe.
So speaking out might be more helpful than you realise, and not just to you, but to the person who you're trusting that I want to talk to you about my issue.
Yeah.
So I think that I'd love for everybody to throw in some little points of, I think this is a great episode about happiness, about better mental health, anything at all. Everybody throw in, what have we got that we'd like to share?
Well, how we can improve our mental health? Well, step one has always got to be, just know that you're normal. There is not one feeling or one emotion that you might have right now or have had in the past that no one else has ever had. Mm-hmm. We all have the same emotions. So realize that you are normal. Start with that.
Anybody?
I think realizing what you're consuming and taking in, right? I think this is a massive one that I've noticed in myself fairly recently, which is, you know, there's been a lot of things in the news that have been quite heavy in recent time. And I think that I've certainly found that that's been something that affects my mental health.
Great point.
Because I think that we do have this bias that we view that the things that we're seeing, hearing, consuming are happening everywhere. And I think that we assume that that is the norm, right? We take in that in. And the thing is, you know, as bad as it is, whether we know about it or we don't know about it, it's sadly still happening. And don't get me wrong, it's good to educate ourselves on things so that we can make a stand for things that are wrong and that sort of thing. But I'm talking about just generally protecting our own mental health. The more negativity we allow in, the more negative we feel, and the more positivity we allow in, the more positive we feel. One thing I'd love to share is there's a great website out there called the Good News Network, and it is a news website where they only share good news stories, and it's all all over the world, and it's in all forms, sort of science advances, things that have happened, amazing stories that sometimes I think if anyone listening feels that they've heard something in the news, or, you know, they've, even it doesn't have to be in the news, but it can be on social media, it can be things around you, you know, like if there's a lot of things going wrong around you, just to have a read of some things on there, just to realize, to balance that and realize that, you know, it's not all bad and there's not just bad things happening, but the bad things are the ones that we report on, you know, people don't report on the good stuff.
It is about balance, and that's exactly it. You know, the news is that it just collates information that's about things that have gone wrong, but there is nothing out there that goes, hey, this is everything that's gone right in the world today.
I just spend 5 minutes every day looking at cat videos.
Do you know what I think is nice? Knowing things that either make you laugh. So like for me, a really good go-to is Friends. It's just, it never gets old. You can watch it. Yeah, I mean, Schitt's Creek's great, but Friends is one that you can watch over and over and over again.
Schitt's Creek is.
Yeah, I suppose. I feel like
and Frasier as well.
Hold on.
Yeah, I feel like it never ages, Friends. Like you could, I can watch it every time and it still makes me laugh the same things.
Two and a Half Men.
Only Fools and Horses. Hunter, have you got
anything? Parks Recreation.
I thought you said Pirates of the Caribbean then. I was like, that's not really
Parks Recreation, very good as well.
Yeah, and you like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, don't you, as
I
well?
I do, and Impractical Jokers.
And you love Impractical Jokers. I mean, literally, I hear you laughing out loud when you watch that. And that is an important factor. Things that can make us happy is things that we watch on TV. And now we're in a world where we can actually choose what we want to watch. So,
choose something
that
will
make you laugh.
One of my favourite stories ever was our friend in LA that her mum had a C-section, and she watched the film Dumb and Dumber after having a C-section and laughed so much that she had to be restitched. Yes. I mean, so, but do you know what I mean? It is when you're feeling, when you're recovering and you don't feel well, and that can be recovering physically or it can be mentally, you know, putting good things into your body. And it's the same as, you know, we know that food wise, if we put good things in, our body will function well. And if we put bad things in, it won't.
Yeah.
But we don't really think about it in terms of mentally. And it's exactly the same.
Music's another thing.
Absolutely. Listening to feel good music. You know, I remember
Nickelback,
there we go. Shout out to Nickelback again.
Can you tell when I wake up in the morning?
Yes, we can hear it. Yes. We can hear you. You blast music and we can hear you singing your head off every morning.
It's so good for you.
Your voice is louder than the music.
Really?
Yeah. And the best bit of all, we were in a therapy session a few weeks ago, and obviously our therapy room is underneath your bedroom, Hunter, and we were in the therapy, and then all we could hear was, what was it he was singing? Hunter was singing so loudly. I think it might have been The Suite, actually.
I don't know, because I was trying to talk louder. To try and...
It's so funny.
I walked into my room and realised my stomach dropped. So I was like, oh,
well, the best thing was he came and found me and he walked in dead sheepish. And I was like, you all right? He was like, no, I'm not, no. And I was like, what's happened? And he went, I'm so embarrassed.
Yeah,
also going to say, we've got a routine at home that one of our cats sits, we've got the sundial, and he sits on the sundial waiting for us to let him in the door. And we look out of our bedroom window and see him. And
can we just say he does have a cat flap? We don't leave him outside.
No, he has a cat flap.
He can get in and out whenever he wants.
But he knows. But he wants a human door.
But the sundial is right under our bedroom, and he knows. So
actually, it's not. We can see it from our bedroom.
It's under my bedroom.
It's actually under your bedroom. Yeah. And this is what I'm leading to, is because this Saturday you got up really early, and because you got up first and you were obviously singing, I looked out of the window and he's looking at you. And he was looking at you.
Yes, the cat was listening to you as well. Anything else to add
Music's a really good one. And I think when you're feeling down, you can always listen to something, you know, maybe create a playlist, I think is a really nice thing to do. Like a feel good playlist with songs that personally like inspire you and make you feel like you can get up and go and you can seize the day. I think that's really, really helpful. Yeah. You know, so thinking about what you put into your body physically, but also mentally. Yeah. So, you know, the people you're around comes into that, the things that you consume on TV and you know the news, just deciding that you don't want to watch it, don't let it in if you find that it's affecting you, certainly not late at night, because then we often dwell on it when we're sleeping. And then we can wake up in a bad mood, so watching comedies, listening to feel good music, all those sorts of things.
Mindfulness meditation as well I think is really good, can really help.
I've got to go with the number one in this toolbox for your mental health, and it is the antidote to anxiety. And that is gratitude. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people talk a lot about gratitude, but I want you to consider in a bit more depth. What I would like you to do is, I want to give you an exercise now, a bit of homework. And what I want you to do is look at your life right now and look at where you started your journey. And that might have been when you were at school and you were thinking about things that you'd like when you got older. Wherever you started your journey into where you are now, and I want you to make a list of all your achievements, right? And I want you to just consider that. Not how you feel about your life, things that are actually factual and things that you've achieved in your life. And look at that. And just look around the room that you're in. Look around the car that you're in. And just look at the amazing things in your life and think about those every single day. And don't just think about them. Feel them. That feeling that you had, when I get this car, I'll be so happy. Get those feelings again and get excited about your life. Anybody? Because you've achieved... I'm not finished yet. Because I know that you've all achieved some amazing things.
Yeah, sorry. Can you try not to breathe? Then I know you've not finished.
Eva, honestly, when you think about it, everyone listening to this podcast right now, you've achieved the most remarkable things in your life, and you've just forgotten them, or you take them for granted, or you were told not to make a big deal. Don't make other, don't brag because it makes other people feel bad. Absolute rubbish. Brag to yourself, right? Look at your life, look at the amazing things that you've done, and start bragging to yourself, because there's nothing better than realizing how amazing you are.
So what you're saying is that people should blow their trumpets.
Yeah, you've got to blow your own trumpet, but, gratitude, it is the antidote to anxiety, without question.
So if your trumpet has been in a cupboard, get it out, give it a polish.
Get the dust
off. Blow it hard. Kids, anything else to add before we conclude?
I think everything I've said has been said, really.
Yeah, I think we've thrown some great stuff out today.
I think I'm just going to finalise on realising that you are normal and that you aren't doing as bad as you think. Like, honestly, every single person, and I'm sure you two will say the same, that sits in front of me in clinic thinks that they are really struggling, that they are worse than anybody else that's struggling with what they're struggling with, and that they're coping so badly. And every single one, I kind of want to say to them, you're not doing as bad as you think. You're doing incredibly. Like, even just getting through each day is amazing with some of the things that people deal with, and really acknowledging how well you're doing compared to you and compared to what you're going through, because nobody else is going through the things that you're going through, has your backstory, has, had your life. So you cannot compare yourself to anyone else. And I think it's so overwhelming and feels so horrible when you think that you're doing so badly. So realizing that actually you're not.
And just realise, just realising one other thing, you've no idea how many people out there who are looking at you, looking at your social media and thinking, I wish I was there.
Because I think it's a very easy thing to do is to not appreciate, to feel like you're the only person going through that, because ultimately you can't feel what other people are feeling. And you don't talk about it enough. And even when, in the rare case you do hear about someone feeling something similar, words aren't as powerful as the actual feelings you're feeling, and if it doesn't feel like it's the same, I guess. Yeah. And you don't feel like
it's not a conversation you have, is it? Like, when even if you were to tell your friends about how you struggle, you tend to sort of mask it a little bit, make it sound not as bad, so you don't realise how bad everyone else is feeling. Yeah. And therefore we just think that everyone's doing better than us and we're really struggling. And I cannot stress that enough, because I hear it so often. People lose sight of how much they are dealing with and doing, and they keep going every day, and that in itself is incredible. So I just want to end for me on only comparing yourself to yourself and you doing better than the day before, because that's massive. And if you don't appreciate how well you're doing, you're always going to feel like you're struggling, when actually realizing and taking stock of everything you are doing can help you to feel so much better about yourself and how you keep going.
I've got one last thing. Talking about appreciating the now, because if you think about it, you feel anxious about your future. You can feel anxious about or have guilt or regrets and negative emotions about your past. Whereas the solution to everything is living right in the now. And that's not an easy thing to do for a lot of people, living in the now. But I'll give you a tip that might help. What I want you to do is just look at the 2-day rule. So you consider the most you can look at in the future. You can make goals for longer than that, but don't look beyond 2 days in the future. Don't look beyond 2 days in the past. And if you do that, what you're doing, instead of having this massive thing to consider, you're condensing it, and you've only got 4 days at the most to think about. And honestly, when you do that, it changes a lot of things.
And finally, the only thing that I would like to just add extra to everything we've discussed today is affirmations, because I think that we consistently play negative messages in our own head. We have this negative narrative that comes over in our voice, you know, I'm not good enough and I can't do that and I'll never be able to. So again, going back to balance, then practice positive affirmations, even if you don't actually believe it. You know, if you don't believe it, it doesn't matter, because even just saying it, you are starting to make an inroad, you know, the smallest little indentation into creating a new neural pathway. So repeat whatever that might be, you know, that only good things happen to me, or, you know, I'm fit, I'm healthy and I'm happy, you know, whatever it is, something that's positive, and decide, you know, not I'll be happy when, but I'll be happy now. And I'm happy because of the things that I've achieved and the fact that I'm here today. And we really appreciate you and we're really happy. And you guys make us happy for listening to our podcast, for the messages that we receive, for the lovely feedback that we've been getting about our handbook to happiness. And it really makes us happy to know that our happiness handbook is helping you. So if you enjoyed today's episode, do please give us a like, share and a follow, and come back next week for more. Thanks so much for joining us. Wherever you're listening to this podcast today, do be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and we'd be incredibly grateful of a 5-star review.
Oh, and don't forget to recommend our podcast to your family and friends.
And if you'd like to have a look at some more free resources, take a look at our website, nickandeva.com.
If you want to drop us a question, we'd love to hear from you. Send it to admin@speakman.tv.
And you can follow us. We're at The Speakmans on all social media platforms. On YouTube, we're Handbook to Happiness Pod. If you are struggling, do be sure to speak to your general practitioner. And all that's left to say is that we appreciate you spending time with us today.